Hello and welcome to the GWL at 30 podcast series. Developed and recorded by volunteers, this podcast sheds light on our history and celebrates our 30 years of work across six main themes: accessibility, green, LGBTQ+, anti-racism, violence against women, and changemaking. Our first episode is on the theme of access in its broadest sense, with volunteers talking to staff members across facilities, adult learning, and volunteering.
Hi, I'm Neep, and I've been volunteering with GWL since December 2022.
Hello, I'm Joy, and I've been a member of the library since the 1990s.
We're joined today by past and present GWL staff who'll be talking about access in their roles. Access is a huge part of our work, so this is just a snapshot of access at GWL.
Hello, I'm Becca, and I'm an ex-employee of Glasgow Women's Library. I was Facilities Management Officer from spring 2019 to the very beginning of 2023, January 2023.
And I'm Gabrielle Macbeth. I'm the Volunteer Coordinator at Glasgow Women's Library. I've been in this role since 2011. I now work part-time with my colleague Ren to deliver the volunteering programme.
My name's Deborah Walker. I'm an adult literacy and numeracy tutor. You'll hear us being called ALN tutors. I've been with the library since 2019.
So, Gabby, the library has been in lots of different places, and it would be interesting to hear a little bit about your experience of working at the Mitchell Library, which is where GWL was before coming to Bridgeton.
Yes. So people might know that we have moved many times in our 32 years history. When I started, we were based in the Mitchell Library, which was a temporary space before we moved here in 2013. We called it the Mitchell Library. It was actually the former Anderson Library, which is an annex of the Mitchell, but we were really on the premises of the Mitchell building and very much under their control, I suppose, in terms of opening hours. We were on the ground floor, but there was a few steps to get into the building, and so it wasn't wheelchair accessible, which was really frustrating for us. But the space in general was quite frustrating. We were really crammed in, and we had to kind of make do, but it was temporary. So I think that's probably why at that time we really didn't invest much in making the space more physically accessible. I think it also meant that when we came here, it was like a complete non-negotiable that the whole building would be wheelchair accessible. So we did lots of different changes to this building to make sure that hopefully anyone could come and visit us, and also that anyone could work here and volunteer here as well. Can't just think of access as like visitors. It's something that can impact anyone who's part of the organisation in whatever role.
So Glasgow Women's Library takes a person-centred, values-led approach to access. Can you give some concrete examples to show what that means in practice?
Yes, I wanted to give an example of what that means in my role working with volunteers. I think the person-centred thing means for me that acknowledging that everyone's different. There's no formula really for being accessible and for including people. One of the first things that we do when someone gets in touch about volunteering is, as part of the application process, we ask them what would make it easy for them to volunteer with us. And that, I think, throws that question really wide open. And then we get a really wide range of answers from people saying, well, for me it'd be travel expenses, or I don't like really busy spaces, to I'm in a wheelchair, to I have a visual impairment, I need a laptop with a larger font, to I have caring responsibilities and therefore some flexibility would be appreciated. And I'd say maybe 90% of times these are things that we can accommodate and that we want to accommodate. In terms of being values led, I think a really important value of GWL is in in when thinking about access is about being reflective and being open to learning. But that also means acknowledging that we don't have all the answers and that we have blind spots, and that sometimes people are excluded despite our best intentions, and that we have to be really open to people telling us that and to hearing that and to doing then what we can to address it, and avoiding the sometimes the reflex, which is to be quite defensive, which I mean I've certainly experienced, being like, oh, but I didn't mean to do that, and but actually just been like, but this is an opportunity to learn and to do things better.
Becca, Gabby was just mentioning there that there had been a lot of changes made to the building, and of course the building was already a library before GWL came here, but could you tell us a little bit more now about the specific changes that were made to the building in order to make it more accessible?
Yeah, so in the first phases of development, which is before I worked here and before the library moved into the building, there were a few big adaptations made. One was the lift shaft, which is on the side of the building, which enables much greater physical access to this room here, the community room, as well as the gallery and the toilets upstairs. And that lift has also created an opportunity for the sculptural artwork on the outside of it, which I think is really beautiful. Another really big change that was made was in the room that we call the event space. It was, as I understand it, just a wide open room. And then what was built inside was the archive storage and the mezzanine. And that enables access to the archive boxes, like having that protected specialist storage for them in shelves that are rolling shelves, so you can sort of get in and out of them easily, means that people are able to come to this building every day to use that archive material for all sorts of different projects. And also that mezzanine also has its own platform lift, so that's also physically more accessible than just with the staircase as well. The other thing I was thinking about physical access to the building is the toilets. There were three extra toilets were put in place down in the event space, and I think another one up here by the community room. So as well as sort of adding capacity for numbers of people in the building, that the toilets are all individual closed stalls, and they're all like accessible just one door, which I think makes it a really safer place than a sort of toilet block that might be gender exclusive or less welcoming. And I think that's a really beautiful thing that's been done. More recently, during the lockdowns, we were able to do a few more things for physical access. We automated lots of the doors, and so the doors are running all the way through from the main entrance at the main library space, all the way through the corridor to the lift, and then from the lift into the community room here. Those doors were, particularly the main doors beside the main entrance, were really heavy for a long time. And it was a daily thing of like hopping up to help people come in or letting people know that they're not closed, that they're just heavy. And so I think changing that was a delight. It was absolutely lovely that now they just swing open from a sensor as soon as people arrive in the in the welcome hall.
Yeah. So a lot there that's been done in terms of physical access, and in terms of the building as well. One of the other things that has been noted is the sense that this is really a building that is very much one that's cared for. So, Gabby, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about how that sense of being the building being cared for is really fostered.
It's interesting to think about that as being about access as well, but we want people to feel welcome when they come here and want them to feel comfortable. And I think we spent a lot of time when we first moved into the building thinking about the alignment of the shelves and the shape of the front desk and how could we make that something that, that was physically accessible, so not too high, but that also wasn't austere or kind of put a barrier between people behind that front desk and people coming in. So things that, just really giving time to find the right feng shui and all of that. But then also small things like
we've got lovely big fluffy cushions, and I think some of us obsess about this more than others, but I like to go around and plump them and make sure they're all neat. As some of my colleagues love bringing in flowers, and there's plants. Things that I guess might belong in someone's home as well. And I also want to give a big shout out to our wonderful cleaners, Doreen and Jenny, who love the space, and their role is to make sure it's somewhere that's clean and healthy, but also somewhere that's cared for and loved. And I know that in their work, they're thinking about people coming in, visitors coming in, and finding it cared for and clean and loved as well. And I think if people come in and see a space that is loved, hopefully they feel that they're loved as well, that they're cared for, and that, you know, having a place that's conducive to learning and to
relaxing.
Thank you. Yeah. is so important. I think we have lots of beautiful things. Like we have a complete aversion to like hideous office furniture, just because it's usually beige and like really not very nice materials. So a lot of our stuff is actually recycled and reused, so it's not cost us loads of money, but it's nice stuff that's personal to us.
So the cared for feeling in the building, that's something that GWL has control over, but some of the more structural things that maybe GWL can't do much about is maybe physical access. Is there some physical access issues that are beyond GWL's control, and how does GWL kind of mitigate for those kind of problems?
Yeah, my first answer to this question would be about the sort of transport links to the building, but also in the way that you phrased it then, it did make me remember that this is a listed building, which creates a few barriers for us as well. For instance, the work I mentioned earlier, where we did the automated doors, and all of the work that was done in the big renovation before we moved in, all had to go through the planning office as well, which just is a fair amount of admin, and we're really well supported by architects to help us get through that. But it is relevant to accessibility, particularly some of the things that were designed in early 1900s for particular uses are now not ideal for like one of the doors in particular is so narrow, and it would just be lovely to just like make it really big. But in the sort of other things that are like out with our control, I think the train station unfortunately has big staircases down to the platform. I mean, I think the nearest train station with level access or lift access would be Delmarnock, which is a couple of miles away. So that's a tough shout, like you can get the bus along, but I think that does make a barrier. I think one of the ways that we're adapting to it, or trying to do what we can with what we can, is we sponsor the railway station?
Adopt.
Thanks. So yeah, we adopt the Bridgeton railway station, which means we have planters and a sort of little gardening boxes, and also signage on the platform. And I would say the Active Welcome Cluster do a really big amount of work in helping people who might arrive in this area not know where the library is or not have been here before. And there's signage and maps from the train station, but there's also lots of the pedestrian and cycle signage, which is, I don't know, a few miles radius around here in those sort of like turquoisey green signs. And so they can help people to get here. I suppose the other side of it is the digital access that's enabled through the blogs and all the website content, social media, the videos and digitization of things that are created in GWL that are shared globally.
Amazing. So Debs, can you tell us a bit about what the costs of access are for GWL? So kind of financial, time, resources, and can you give some examples of the costs of access ranging from nothing to expensive, time consuming, resource heavy?
So on the ALN team, I would say we probably cover all of those: financial, time and resources. Financially, we are able to offer our learners travel expenses, At the moment we pay £5.50, which is really good because that's gone up from £5, so it sort of covers the increase in maybe train fares or bus fares. We also were really lucky last year to get some funding. That funding allowed us to buy new resources. We looked at some of the resources that we had previously, and some of the stuff that we had was still working in pounds and shillings for some of the financial worksheets that we had. So it was great just to get rid of those and move into the 21st century. But it meant that we could update a lot of our things that things were a lot more accessible for our learners. We have learners with all different sorts of issues. We've got visual issues. I've got one learner who particularly doesn't see very well, so that meant we could invest that money into paper with wider lines and larger flashcards to work with that learner. Also a keyboard. We were lucky enough to have one of those large keyboards donated as well, so that was really good. Also, when we start with a learner, we will take it softly, and every learner has their own experience. It's tailored to them, it's bespoke, and they'll let us know how things will work. We've had learners that won't initially come straight through the doors. That could be a barrier for them. So what we'll do is we'll work with them, whether that be with chatting to them on the phone or maybe meeting them outside the building. There's been lots of ways that we've worked with that. So it can be quite time intensive as well, just working with them. But eventually when we get them through that door, then that's the most special moment we can work with them. So yeah, there's a lot goes into resources and time and finance.
Mm-hmm. It's sometimes said that out of difficulties come opportunities, and COVID and the lockdowns that went along with COVID were maybe an example of that. So, Becca, could you tell us a little bit about the changes that had to come in during that time?
When we decided to close in March 2020, it was just before legislation to close, and I think that gave us all a really sort of serious pause for thought about what our purpose is as an organisation, and how, I mean, it took us a few weeks, I think, to like consider it and to imagine what was possible to continue digitally. And also what was really important was like how we would make the decision to return. It was very sudden to make the decision to close and for everyone to work from home. And then the process of making the decision of how to return was a very careful, considered one. We invited all staff, and I think it was staff and not volunteers for phase return. Well, there were three sort of like factors to the strategy for how to return. We had a risk and opportunities register, where we sort of laid out the risk of catching COVID, but also the risks of feeling unsafe in the building, and also the risk of feeling isolated at home. And we considered like quite a broad range of those risks, as well as the organisational risks of not having the shop open every day, or you know, things that were more practical or like that. And so we had the risk and opportunities register and a phased return planning document that was we set up a structure where we'd meet once a month, reflect on the guidance that was being given from museums organisations, library organisations and visitor centre organisations, you know, and what was coming from the Scottish Government in best practice advice for how to reopen. And so gradually we brought this plan together. But I think the most important part was actually the third strand of these meetings, which was the guiding principles meeting. And that was a group, I wasn't at the meeting actually, I was part of the other two, but not this one. But it was a document that really influenced my work throughout 2020 through to 2022, was thinking about what other principles that matter the most to our organisation about why we want to reopen, what we want to achieve whilst being closed, or whilst being part-time closed, or you know, having some of our resources less accessible. And those principles were things like, Gabby, can you remember?
I think it really acknowledged that people were experiencing the pandemic really differently. I heard this expression recently about we were all in the same storm, but we were all in very different boats. And and some people felt fine coming back out, some people didn't, and so on. So I think we were thinking, bringing our values to developing those guidelines. So it was a really good example of like values-led work in this quite specific context of like a pandemic.
Thanks, Gabby. Yeah, so for example, with our colleagues and staff members, some people found the, you know, the working from home like a glorious quiet space, and other people were in flats with busy families and maybe students and lots of people with different priorities, and so actually for them being able to do their work at home was really hard. Mm-hmm. So part of our phased return planning was that before we reopened to the public, we reopened to staff, and then once staff were confident in the sort of procedures of working with the new sort of hygiene regime, that then we welcomed volunteers, and gradually we opened the doors to the public as well. And that enabled staff who needed access to the building for their work, for example, archivists, but also those who needed a place to work away from a shared flat or other competing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And obviously some of the changes that came in, particularly during lockdowns, have endured. So Debs, what in your area are the things that had to come in and that you now continue to do?
So as Becca says, there was a phased return plan, and the ALN team were one of the last teams to come back. Before the pandemic, we were completely one-to-one in-person learning. And then when the pandemic hit, there's three of us in the ALN team, and we had to sit together. The whole world discovered this thing called Zoom. We're all sitting on Zoom trying to work out, how do we do this? How do we work with learners? And we had decided, yeah, we're going to have to offer it digitally, so we will do it on Zoom. Not everybody started off on Zoom, though. As I said before, we had to make phone calls and just check that everybody was okay. All of our files are in a filing cabinet with all the learners' details, so we had to go into the library digital system and get everybody's contact details to contact them. But the other thing that it highlighted as well was the fact that a lot of our learners were digitally excluded. So it meant that we could tap into Connecting Scotland funding, and it allowed us to be able to give learners a MyFi device, which offers Wi-Fi, and an iPad or a laptop. But then the other thing came as well, as they didn't know how to use these. So we had to work with phoning them up and saying, right, press this button, press that button, to eventually to the point where we got them on Zoom. And then we would do our lessons that way. So we offer a hybrid model now, which means that if learners are happy and comfortable to come into the library, they can work with us one-to-one. But as Gabby says as well, there are learners who still don't feel comfortable coming out and travelling on the bus or the train, so we still offer Zoom lessons as well. And then you've got the occasional learner who will phone up and say, oh, I'm waiting for the boiler repair service, could we just do the lesson Zoom today? And that means, yeah, we can just send you that Zoom link, just pop on and we can get you. So it's really opened up the services that we can offer. It means also that you don't need to be in Glasgow to receive the services. We've had, we offer a service called Conversation Cafe, and we've done a hybrid model of that, and we've had people Zoom in from London and different places just to be part of it as well. So it's really opened up the access that we can give.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Gabby, all of the staff are doing some form of access work, and working with each other to alleviate barriers and increase accessibility. So in practice, how do volunteers, ALN and the building kind of come together to co-work on access? And can you give an example?
Yes, a really good question. The building needs to be accessible in as many ways as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean that someone's going to be able to volunteer if we're not open to hearing people saying this is what's going to make it easier for us to volunteer. And there's been examples as well where it's having support with literacy or numeracy or like basic IT that's really enabled someone to volunteer. Organisations do need to have different ways of making things accessible. It's not just the responsibility of like the person who looks after the building or equality, diversity, inclusion officer. It's something that if everyone in the team comes with that commitment, then it means that someone, that people are able to access the building in really different ways and access services in very different ways, and that all these projects come together to mean that someone can have an experience that's really positive, that's I guess, kind of bespoke to them. I think we also, it's so important to be listening to people. Like, people know what's going to make their life easier. Like, they are experts at this. Like, and they often have found really easy, cheap ways of being able to go about their lives. And are really generous and kind of saying, like, if you could do that for me, that would make that so much easier. And I think as a team, we work really well to empower people to tell us those things and to then take them on board and make them happen. We talk at the library about having our can-do clogs on and, you know, being really solution-focused, because sometimes these things are not rocket science. It's just like thinking outside the box and being up for doing them.
So the last thing I wanted to ask all of you is, if there was no limits, if money was no object, what is something that you would like to happen, like to change at GWL?
Yeah, I've got lots of answers for this, but I think the one that I'd be most excited about, especially now that I'm not an employee, but I'm an attendee of events and participant in projects, is I would love if there was access digitally and that sort of the access that I think GWL did really beautifully during the pandemic, where online events were warm and friendly and chatty and like an environment for learning. Like, and I think that I really saw that as such a magical achievement of the library, was how the online spaces created that atmosphere. And I would really love if every project and every different thing that happens at the library was able to be duplicated digitally to people who are more isolated or living in places that it's hard to get transport here. You know, and I think, as Dev's mentioned before, this comes along with funding for everyone to have computers and internet and literacy, IT literacy support. And, you know, so it's like a full package, but like, yeah. if all of the events and projects were able to be duplicated, that would be fantastic.
I've got loads of answers as well, and I'm kind of swaying between which one to give you. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say a really practical one, which could be have BSL interpretation at every single event. And then I'm also going to sneak in one that's more general, which is about like an unlimited training budget for our volunteers and staff to learn about the lived experiences of everyone in Scotland and how that might impact on their access to GWL, followed up by an unlimited budget to action a whole bunch of stuff that comes from that training.
I think for me it would be for ALN in general, but for everybody else, a GWL bus. It would be able to be accessible, people could be picked up and brought to the lesson, it'd be electric, so it was with our green theme, and it would just allow a lot of learners to be able to come who maybe don't like the thought of being on public transport with lots of different people that they don't know. And it'd be really nice.
Amazing.
We would like to conclude simply by thanking Becca, Gabby and Dubs for taking the time to come along today and share their thoughts with us on access at GWL. Also thanking Rachel, who has facilitated all of this work, Fee, our sound engineer, and Ren, who has been supporting the work on the podcast as well. And in general, just thanking GWL, obviously, for all the work it does and has been doing for several decades now.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the GWL at 30 podcast series. For more information about our three decades project, see our website, and stay tuned for our next podcast.